To order today. It's February the 24th, and my co-chairman, Senator Wilikowski, is walking in, and Senator Huggins on my side, and then I'll go ahead and turn it over to our co-chairman on the House side.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Present today, Representative Wilson. There's a lot going on today and a lot of different things, but this is an important briefing, and I'm Representative Johnson, co-chair of Resources, and my co-chair is also on the way. So with that, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Thank you. And we're hoping the public will get a chance as this continues to play on gavel to gavel. A lot of interest in the mining industry, and it's a big, obviously it's a part of our economy. It could be a bigger part of our economy. We want to hear what's happening out there in Alaska with respect to development and jobs. What are the challenges? And so we've, to that end, invited Steve Burrell, who's the head of the Miners Association, to come forward. And he has, delegated him the task of bringing in some of the companies around Alaska that are currently developing mining sites, and he will have them come up in order. But welcome, Steve, today, and Senator French joined us as well.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Very much appreciate the opportunity. This is, I want to say, the 10th or 12th year that we've done this to provide a industry briefing on the, just update you folks on the status of the industry and what's going on. You have several handouts in front of you. I'm not going to be talking towards those. Some of those you will have already seen. this afternoon, I'm going to go through some of the major mines and projects. Then Lorna Shaw is going to specifically talk about recent mine permitting experience in Alaska. And how that has worked, and then finally, we've asked Carl Hahnemann to give you folks a real brief update on the current status at Red Dog, which is serious. Major mines. There's the map showing the major projects around the state, and of course, the ones in red are the operating properties. With down in southeast Kensington this summer should be producing gold for the first time, and it'll make six major mines within the state. From the placer mining standpoint, to start things off, 2009 and 2010, we expect to be approximately the same, with in the vicinity of 175 family mining operations around the state. Production of approximately 54,000 ounces each year. A major part of the industry spread out all over the state. Usabelli Coal Mine, the slide's a little bit difficult to read, but the current statistics at Usabelli, 130 employees, and if you looked at this first handout, you would note that when we put this, when the McDowell folks put this together, there was 125, and so they've increased that now. And this last year, 1.9 million tons per year was shipped. About 52% came to the interior power plants and the heating plants in the Fairbanks area primarily, and 48% was export coal. One of the things that Usabelli did this past year was to do a new resource evaluation, and their conclusion is that they have approximately 700 million tons within their current lease areas that they could be producing. So at their current rate of approximately 2 million tons a year, that obviously is 350 years of production. This slide, I believe we showed before, but it's extremely informative. People that are not acquainted with the mining industry, this shows the sequence of events, and of course in the center is the drag line actually doing the digging, but on the far left hand side in the cross section below, you'll see the green line representing the surface before any mining takes place. So that material is first removed. So the first block, if you will, of overburden can be removed. Below that is the first of three seams of coal that are then exposed, and they do them, of course, sequentially. The mining pit, if you will, is here in the center. And then on the right are the spoil piles, the overburden and interburden that has been put to the side, and off in the distance you see the cross section of the reclamation. And And if you look at the extension of those crossed lines up above, you can see what it actually looks like on the ground. This and over here, of course, is the final reclamation. Hecla Greens Creek Mine, 331 employees now, plus 12 full-time contractors. Approximately 79% of those are Alaska residents. Approximately 32 million annual wages plus benefits. Largest property taxpayer in the Juneau borough, Juneau area, and the largest private sector employer in all of Southeast Alaska. This picture shows the various ore body types, and the white lines are the entries, if you will, the declines that go down to access the ore in each of those ore bodies. The coloration indicates a different kind, slightly different kind of ore, and then down here, clear at the bottom, you see extension where they believe in the future they'll be able to go also. Greens Creek has now been operating since 1989, and throughout that process, they have continued to explore and find additional ore, and we believe that they're going to continue for many years to come. The ship loadout facilities for the concentrates, and next is the Pogo mine, underground gold mine. This picture was taken in the fall. You see the facilities on the ridge line there with the actual underground mine underneath this ridge, and you see that in this overlay. The different facilities we're looking towards the east across the Good Pasture River, with the airstrip, of course, down to the lower left-hand corner. 2009 versus 2008, significantly improved in many ways. Safety operation, 50% reduction in reportable safety incidences. We're not saying lost time accidents, we're saying just incidences. Fewer spills, 55% reduction in reportable items. Higher production, a 12% increase to 390,000 ounces, and this is on state land. Employee retention is improved, and during the year, Tech sold their portion of ownership to Sumitomo Metal Mining, and they now have 297 employees plus 97 full-time contractors. For 2010 and the future, ongoing work to improve safety and environmental performance even further, increased to, again, to 390,000 ounces in 2010, and real challenges include fuel cost and electrical costs for the future. Other mines, two properties in Alaska that are currently in an idle status, Nixon Fork and Rock Creek. At Nixon Fork, Pacific Northwest Capital and a subsidiary, Fire River Gold, now own the property. They're working on the plan right now to decide what their future is going to look like. They're evaluating, basically consolidating all the information that they've had in the past and looking at where they need to be doing additional drilling to make the most efficient startup of the property, and they expect within 2 years. Rock Creek at Nome, and if to orient you, if you have not, if you've seen the Sitnasauk Village Corporation windmills, electrical generation, it's on this ridge right here. Just off of the picture is where Sitnasauk has just installed wind generation. In the picture itself, you see the pit area off to the to over here where I'm circling off to the side, and then the tailings impoundment, and then the mill facilities over here at the side. statistics, currently 20 employees. When they're in full operation, they'll be at 135 with approximately $10.4 million payroll annually. Care and maintenance cost right now is about $17.5 million a year just for what they're doing. Water management plan being implemented, and their options are being evaluated, how they expect to restart the project. Projects in advanced exploration and permitting, the most advanced is Chewett Nicole, followed also by two major projects, Donlin and Pebble. With in the case of Chewett Nicole, this is a map that you've not seen before, probably. One of the significant changes to this map is that rather than a road and conveyor that comes around to the side, there is a straight line conveyor now, an elevated conveyor opportunity that they're looking at, and then a road that better follows the topography through the area. Investment expected more than $600 million, 350 full-time jobs at the mine site, 12.5 million metric tons per year is the design capacity. The overall deposit itself, and I would point out that this mine area is just within this small piece right here, is 300 million tons of coal. If that was converted into oil, it would be the fourth largest oil deposit in Alaska. Infrastructure needs, access road, elevated coal conveyor, power line, housing, airstrip, logistics center down at Ladd Landing, which is over here on the coast, a trestle out to water that will accommodate a 65-foot deep water for Cape class vessels. Right now, a supplemental environmental impact statement is being prepared. The draft is in process. They expect to be in a public review process in the fourth quarter of this year, and expect decisions anticipated for 2011. Donlin Creek, of course, this kind of a slide with the airfield and the camper you've seen before with the ore deposits over here and over in this area. 2009, they completed the project feasibility study, conducted intensive outreach in the villages, a commitment that they had made to the people of the region. 2010, they evaluating the feedback and also looking at other options to provide energy. This project would require a very large amount of energy, and that is a major, major focus right now to figure out how to get energy to the project and have a secure and a price secure, if you will, energy scenario. Here are the villages involved. You can see they had, I think it's 11 centralized meeting locations where the different villages could come together to meet to talk about the project, so their own people in the region would understand what is being proposed and what the status is right now. There have been at some points up to 300 local employees from those villages working at the site, and this year it's going to be significantly lower. And so it was an effort to brief the people and tell them, hey, here's where we are, here's what we're trying to do. So it, rather than having somebody else tell them, the company is out telling them the facts. Pebble project in 2009 and 2010, approximately the same budget at $70 million plus or minus. Pre-feasibility study work in 2009 and continued baseline with some exploration. And that's basically the same for this year. Continued work on the pre-feasibility and complete a pre-feasibility study. But they do not anticipate applying for permits during 2010. And in the picture, you see one of the drill rigs out on the project site. Major challenges, a source of power, of course, is going to be a huge piece. The main parts of the project would be, the road and the port and the power. We mentioned that earlier, plus the mill facility itself. Getting through the permit process, workforce development to bring the people of the region up to speed to fill those jobs wherever possible, and of course commodity prices and the overall economics, whether the project is indeed economic is not yet known, understood. This is a picture of before and after of a drill site. As a reference point here, you can see this little portion in the upper picture, and there it is on this one. But you look out across this drill site, this was very shortly after the drill was removed. The stake, of course, shows where the actual drill hole was, and then in this side what it looks like the next year. So very rapid reclamation. Another thing... This, by the way, those are fins on that outhouse to keep it in line so it doesn't start spinning when it's coming back underneath the helicopter. Otherwise, it would spin, and you wouldn't have anything to take home. Anyway, human waste is taken off the site. Grassroots early stage exploration is a comparison now. In 2008, there were 30 projects that spent more than $1 million each on exploration. In 2009, that number dropped to 17 with the financial meltdown that occurred. For several companies, they were not able to get funding until late in the year, last year, 2009. My expectation is that we're going to see similar to 2008 numbers in 2010. That's extremely good news for exploration. Three of the examples of three of the larger projects, International Tower Hill up at Livengood, Heatherdale Resources at Niblack, and Full Metal Minerals at Lucky Shot. At International Tower Hill, I'm showing the same data from last year, but suffice it to say that I didn't have the actual numbers to put in place here, but they're drilling from late last year and into the winter of this year, and has continued to expand and increase the grade at the property. They're better understanding the geology, and they are working very hard, very diligently. At this time, I believe they have three drills out there, drilling in those areas that are wetlands areas, so they're well frozen now, and they'll get those drilled out before breakup, and then they'll continue on later. Heatherdale Resources project down at Niblack, across from Ketchikan on South Prince of Wales. Heatherdale is the new owner. It's a combination of Heatherdale and CBR Gold, who was the previous owner, and the CBR was Committee Bay Resources Gold, and that partnership was finalized in June of 2009, and at this point they have a 25,000-foot drilling program in process right now, $5.35 million, and they have two drills turning as we speak. Very exciting property, very exciting project for the far southeast Alaska. Full Metal Minerals. Full Metal was one of the companies that was badly damaged, if you will, by the financial downturn, meltdown, many have called it. They expect, if they indeed have their financing in place, to take a 10,000 ton sample at Lucky Shot, which is, of course, in the Matsu Borough, just up the Willow Creek. $7.5 million in that range, 25 to 40 employees. The mill for that property, incidentally, if you haven't driven through that valley, it is in place right now, and they have additional permitting to do for that, and they have other projects around the state. With that, I will turn this over to Lorna Shaw, and she will describe current permitting experiences in Alaska. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve. Questions for Steve before we continue on? And Senator Wagner, wanted to acknowledge just before the question goes, Senator Wagner is here, Senator Stedman is here, Senator Joe Thomas is here, and Representative Chris Tuck.
Steve, sorry I was late, but when I came in, you were talking about the Chewett and Coal prospect. What is the feasibility of that being completed in the foreseeable future? Put it that way.
Through the chair. Well, Senator, that project, I believe, is, depending on the legal challenges against it, it is a 98% chance of becoming a mine. Again, they believe they know the feasibility of it. The work that they're putting into it right now is to get that final supplemental environmental impact statement, and they have their nose to the grindstone to get that done. They have been working incredibly hard to do that, and that property, that project has a tremendous benefit to South Central Alaska, and I think they have a very good shot at it, again, depending on legal challenges they get. There are various groups that have declared war against the coal industry. This is very, very low sulfur coal. If you're going to mine coal anywhere in the world, this is the place to do it. This is, and create jobs here.
Great. Additional questions for Steve? Thank you for your work and your presentation. We'll have Lorna Shaw now, Executive Director of the Council of Alaska Producers. Welcome, Lorna.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here as well, and I'm going to give an update on three other projects here in Alaska, three mines in Alaska, and I'm going to give it from a slightly different vantage, and that is looking at it from the perspective of the three most recently permitted projects. And I don't want to go over the entire permitting process. DNR has put together a fabulous presentation that does that. It's 136 slides long. I can't condense that into a slide or two, so I guess just to give you the umbrella, simply put, there's not a single permit to build a mine. There's not a single agency that blesses you to build a mine. It's not like going down to the DMV and applying for a driver's license, passing a test, and walking out and you're ready to go. It is a far more in-depth process, as it should be, but the state provides great leadership in that process. The large mine permitting team provides coordination with DEC, with the federal agencies, with all of the agencies involved in permitting a mine, and they work together to make that process as useful as possible, and they try to take an approach where you look at the mine from a whole project perspective instead of just each agency looking at their little piece of the puzzle, but to try to understand how it all fits together and how it will all work as a whole unit. So what I'd like to do is take a look at the three most recently permitted projects, which are Kensington, the Fort Knox heap leach expansion, and the Red Dog Okaluk pit expansion. First is Kensington, which is a small underground mine that's located about halfway between Juneau and Haines, and it's down here in southeast Alaska. And I don't think any discussion on mine permitting is ever complete without talking about the 20-year process that Kensington has gone through. And it has been 20 years. The Kensington and Jualin mines were developed in the 1890s, and they operated off and on to about the 1930s. And the process for our discussion begins in 1998, about 10 years after the property was acquired by the joint venture between Coeur and Echo Bay. They went through a 6-year permitting process that finally resulted in permits, but the gold prices had dropped so low and operating costs were so high that it wasn't possible to go forward. So it's a little bit of a matter of striking while the iron is hot. Mm-hmm. So they tried again in 1998, another 3-year process, and ultimately they struck out, no permit was issued. But miners are tenacious, and in the third round of permitting, they finally received a permit in 2005. On the second page of the third round of permitting, more than 9 years into this round of permitting, and a complete U.S. Supreme Court decision later, they finally received their permits, they're in place to operate, and that was just this last June 2009. So clearly mining and permitting is not for the faint at heart. This is going to be a huge boon to the Juneau economy and a credit to all of those who came out in support of the project numerous times over the 20 years. This is a picture taken here on the Capitol steps, and Kensington does want to pass along a thank you to everybody who's been supportive throughout this entire process. But we're at a point where the project is moving forward. Huge milestone and significant congratulations to the site. They've worked 1,000 days with no lost time incidents, almost 500,000 man hours. They have additional exploration underway and a hope of a golden future. Their construction workforce is busy. I think they're going to peak at about 300 for construction, and the operations workforce is anticipated to be about 200. I think they've got about 85 to 90 employees right now, and they expect to be up to about 170 by midsummer. They expect to be in production midsummer, middle of the year in 2010. And what's really important to note on this is that the state leadership in the permitting process played a key role. The state cooperated with all of the agencies involved, with the U.S. Forest Service on the EIS, and they coordinated with the city and borough of Juneau for local permits. They brought that into their permitting process to make sure that all of the deadlines and requirements were met for permits that fell outside of DNR's boundaries. And that's the way they do business now, and that's very helpful. What's also important to note is that even though Kensington is just now completing construction, they're not even in operation yet, they are in the renewal phase for some of their permits. The permits were issued in 2005. They've been in place, and it's time to renew a number of those permits, even though they're not yet in operation. The Fort Knox heap leach project is just a new addition to an existing mine. Fort Knox is a low-grade open pit mine just 25 miles northeast of Fairbanks. And on this, thank you, Steve. On this slide, let's see, we've got the heap leach is the circle up here. You can see over here, this is the mine that they're mining in. Most of the things are marked on there, the admin facilities and the tailings impoundment down here. And then I've got it also just in drawing format to orient you. It's about a 12 square mile footprint. Down here is the Fish Creek Valley, and for those of you who were able to attend the Lunch and Learn yesterday, Bill Jeffress gave an overview of all the reclamation that's taken place in that area, and mining continues upstream in the pit area, and now there's an additional processing opportunity. And what heap leaching is, it's an alternative means of recovering gold. Fort Knox has historically been a mill and vat leaching operation. And what that means is that the ore gets ground down to the consistency of about table salt, and the gold is leached out in a series of tanks. With the heap leaching option, instead of having to grind that ore down to the table salt size, they're able to just take it from the mine, place it on the heap leach, and leach the gold in place to recover it. So it's a low-cost method of recovery that allows recovery from a much, much lower grade of gold or of ore. What was once considered waste at Fort Knox can now be ore. The mill takes ore with about 0.018 to 0.025 ounces per ton of gold, and the heap leach will accept ore down to about 0.007 ounces per ton. So if you're not a miner, it looks like rock, and if you are a miner, it still looks like rock. Just to go over the timeline, because this is a new addition, well, first of all, the timeline doesn't compare to Kensington, thank goodness. The initial deposit was discovered in 1984 in an area that's been mined heavily for 100 years. The permits for the project were applied for at the end of November in 1992. State permits were received in February of 94, federal permits in March of 95, and the mine's been in operation continuously since then. The heap leach permitting process began in 2006. The state permits were issued by July. But the Federal Corps of Engineers permit wasn't issued until October 31st of 2007. And because of that delay, they lost the first season of construction on the heap leach, so the project was delayed. And most of the delays were federal, and they were simply an issue of a lack of staff resources. They had a single person working on the project. It wasn't that person's full-time job. They just simply did not have the staff to review this in the time frame that the mine had hoped for. But the state is, again, critical in permitting. DNR had the best bench strength and engineering expertise to review all of the plans. And in cases where the agencies don't have that internal expertise, they have the ability and the financial mechanism to hire world-class experts to provide them oversight, review, and to verify their work to make sure that what moves forward really is in the best interest of Alaska. But the state was involved every step along the way. DEC had to approve the liners. They had to approve the liners and the installation. during the heap leach construction. And there's no rubber stamp in this process. It is a very iterative process, very collaborative, and it can be very lengthy. But permitting the heap leach ultimately leads to a longer life at Fort Knox, 2016 now for the mine and 2022 for processing. And that means a lot to Fairbanks, means a lot to Alaska. Right now there's 500 employees, full-time employees at the mine, and with all of the construction mostly related to the heap leach, there'll be about 300 contractors on site this summer as well. Average annual wage, $70,000. These are good paying jobs. And I think more important than any of the dollar figures, Fort Knox has now passed 3 years without a lost time incident, and they are rapidly approaching 3 million man hours. Again, no lost time incident. But sometimes the money does matter. They are spending quite a bit in Alaska. About 70% of the annual operating budget is spent in Alaska. And in addition, they are the second largest property taxpayer to the borough, $2.8 million, so a significant source of local funding. Last year, $835,000 were paid in royalties to the State Mental Health Trust, almost $2 million in mining license tax, another $400,000 in annual use and claim rental fees, as well as a state corporate income tax. So these are all the benefits that it brings, and you have to be able to get through the permitting process in order to have a mine to bring these benefits to the communities.
Yes, Representative Wilson.
Thank you. You just mentioned that it was the second largest taxpayer in the borough, and in the literature it says this, the largest.
And that's my mistake. They are the single largest taxpayer in the borough, single largest piece of property. I think it goes back and forth between Alyeska and Fort Knox who actually pays the most, but it's the single largest piece of property that is taxed. I think the total amount Alyeska pays slightly more.
Okay, thank you.
And then I was going to move on to Red Dog, which is in northwest Alaska. It's an open pit zinc and lead mine, and it is one of the largest zinc concentrate producers in the world. Red Dog began production in November of 1998, and it has a very complex permitting history, but they are now planning for the next 20 years of operation. After a rough year in 2008, mine production is up in 2009 to a record high, but low metals prices led to a decrease in the property tax or property the pit to the Northwest Arctic Borough. It was still $7 million, but significantly down from the previous year, but the state taxes were up. And what drives that is the zinc and lead price. There's a little bit of risk sharing in there. As the company makes more money, the state makes more money. And you can see on the slide that both zinc and lead prices were at historic lows in 2008, and thankfully they have rebounded. And along with that rebound, the state taxes and nano royalties have come back up, so they should be up again. Good story to tell in terms of employment. 525 employees and contractors. Significant portion of those are NANA shareholder hire, 56%, about $50 million in wages and benefits. So this is a huge economic driver in the northwest portion of the state. But what they're faced with is that their current ore body will soon be depleted, and so they have been in the permitting process to expand to the pit next door, I guess is a good way to put it. And up on the slide, this area over here is what they're referring to as the Akaluk deposit, and over here is the main pit. So it really is right next door. The expansion over there, same mining equipment, same mining practices, it's just moved over a little bit. In order to permit this, a supplemental EIS was required to review the potential impacts from the mine, and again, the state's leadership was critical. The National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, requires the supplemental EIS to evaluate the direct and indirect cumulative impacts to human health specific to the project. And that's been a requirement, but there's a slightly new interpretation now which calls for a full health impact assessment, HIA, which can be very expansive. And HIAs have not traditionally been site-specific. They're more used for health statistics for a population as a whole, or, you know, general information about economic development, cultural changes, health demographics. So this was a new application. And really, the HIA, or the Health Impact Assessment, could have derailed the entire EIS process, not because of what they were expecting to be the findings, but because of the process. It's new, there weren't guidelines, it could have expanded to who knows how big. But the state's leadership was critical. They worked cooperatively with the other agencies to determine how the health information should be included. They made sure that the process didn't get out of hand. The state actually has included now on the large mine permitting team representatives from the Department of Health and Social Services to include the HIA process. So now there is a mechanism going forth. This was the first project in Alaska that included the HIA, but it probably isn't the last. So the result of the state involvement was to make sure that the information was not taken out of context, that it was appropriate and well done. Another example of what the state does is part of the Reclamation and Closure Plan. The Reclamation and Closure Plan, I'm sure you know that the state permits foreclosure. You have to have a closure plan in place before you'll ever get your permits to build a mine. But you know what your plan is 20 years ago probably isn't reflective of what reality is today. So that's reviewed every 5 years and then additionally as appropriate. And so Red Dog had to update their Reclamation and Closure Plan. And the state was involved, and they went through a very collaborative process that included technical review, it included community workshops, it included state expertise, and they came up with a wet closure that would have a wet cover.
Lorna, my apologies. It's 1 p.m. The House committee has to go in to meet. So if you just wrap up briefly and then we'll...
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Basically, the bottom line is that the state's involvement in the permitting process is critical. We have a very complicated process, but it is workable, and it's directly due to the leadership that the state provides and the influence that they have to make sure that the process is done well, to protect the state's interest, but to work collaboratively to find solutions and implement the regulations.
Great. Thank you. Any questions from the committee, House members? Okay. We will go ahead and adjourn. And thank you so much for your presentation. And if it's possible for you to stay after for us to ask some more questions, that would be great. Okay, thank you. We're adjourned.